I'm Jonathan Morrow, and you're listening to the Think Christianly podcast. Well, recently I had the opportunity to be on the God and Culture show with Paul Edwards, and I'd encourage you to check out his website, godandculture.com, and Paul has graciously let me use the audio from that interview in this podcast. And so in this one, we're going to talk about some issues related to faith and culture. How do we think about that as Christians? How do we engage well? And this kind of conversation surrounds my new book, just released with Zondervan, Think Christianly, Looking at the Intersection of Faith and Culture. So I hope you enjoy this. And again, check out Paul's website at godandculture.com.
There are times in history when God uses one person to chart a course for an entire generation and beyond. That's exactly what we see in the faith and leadership of Joseph, who Alistair Begg has called a man with a plan. Hear his story Thursday on Truth for Life.
Truth for Life, weekdays at 9 a.m. on Faith Talk 1500 WLQV.
Glad that promo for Truth for Life aired. I do encourage you to tune in weekday mornings at 9 a.m. for Truth for Life. I was just in Cleveland yesterday with our friends from Truth for Life, Alistair Begg, Bob Butts, Amy Castleberry. Had a great lunch and enjoyed some fellowship together with our friends from Truth for Life. And let me encourage you to tune in weekday mornings at 9 a.m. for Alistair Begg and Truth for Life. I say, and you heard me say in a promo there, that my favorite Christian bookstore is Inner City Christian Bookstore. It absolutely is, at least within driving distance. Alistair Begg's church has a wonderful bookstore, and I was surprised. Well, I shouldn't say surprised. Knowing that I had this interview scheduled today with Jonathan Morrow, I walk in and they're right there in at Parkside Church, Books by the Park. Jonathan, you'll be happy to know this, prominently displayed. Is a display of Think Christianly, Looking at the Intersection of Faith and Culture. Jonathan Morrow is the author. He's the founder of thinkchristianly.org. He co-wrote Is God Just a Human Invention with Sean McDowell. And in this new book, he makes the argument that that every generation of Christians lives at the intersection of faith and culture. And then he makes this point: not only do the majority of teenagers, emerging adults, and adult Christians not hold to a biblical worldview, but those outside the church do not think that the majority of Christians live out the supposed virtues of Christianity. He then says, we have hard work ahead of us, meaning we being Christians. In order to change the way Christians are perceived, it doesn't mean we do this by abandoning truth or ceasing to be distinctively Christian, but it does signal our need to change the tone of the cultural conversation. And then he drops this bomb: the majority of Christians in America are not thinking or living like followers of Jesus Christ ought to. And Jonathan Morrow, it is an honor to welcome you here to the Paul Edwards Program.
Well, thank you for having me on. I'm thrilled to be with you, and it's great to hear that the book's getting around and starting to get out there and hopefully equipping and encouraging people to engage well.
Well, after reading it, Jonathan, I couldn't agree more. It's one thing for you as the author to hope that it does well. It's another thing for a guy that hosts a radio program called God and Culture to want this book in the hands of as many, particularly church leaders, as we can get it into, because you're absolutely right. The pulpits on Sunday morning may be hot with the gospel, but the pews are kind of sitting there. I think, I don't know if you agree with me or not, Jonathan, but I'm a pastor, and I think that there's a disconnect between the pulpit and the pew in terms of, I think the pulpit, pastors are making assumptions about the worldviews of the people they preach to every Sunday that just aren't true.
I think you're absolutely right on that. And what's going on is we're reading the Bible, we're preaching great sermons and things like that, and like I'm sure you do in your church, and yet people are hearing it with their questions and doubts and assumptions and values that are, you know, that's a whole different mindset, and there's a huge gap. And so I'm convinced that we kind of need to get back to the basics in this way to say, look, Christianity actually rises to the level of being true or false. There's actually good reasons to believe it's true. And if it is true, then it speaks to every area of life. It makes a comprehensive claim on reality. And get back and start there and then work our way out. Because I think many Christians have bought into the kind of the myth of the Sunday morning only Christianity. What that means is we're not able to effectively engage the cultural moments that are waiting on us as ambassadors.
I want to, in a moment, ask you to define what you mean by culture. But in the introduction to your book, Jonathan, you say that society is deeply divided along worldview lines, not just political or socioeconomic ones. And that's an important distinction. What do we mean by worldview? I mean, a lot of people listening to us right now would understand the political divisions. You know, the Republican presidential candidates are in our area tonight. They're going to be in a debate here in Detroit, and people will understand the political divisions between conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat. But it's deeper than that on a worldview level. How important is that distinction?
I think it's very, very important because politics and things like that are downstream from worldview and culture and things like that. And so when we ask these questions, now, worldview is simply how we ask and answer the big questions of life. Is God, is he real? Does he exist? What is truth? Can we know things? What is good? Is there life after death? Those are broad worldview questions, but I want to submit that the crisis that we face, and it's a direct implication of the worldview struggle that we're facing, is a crisis of knowledge where I don't think people actually think Christianity is in the realm of knowledge anymore. It's not even moral and spiritual truths are not available to us, and we certainly couldn't know them. And so our society is dividing between more of a secular worldview, which says, look, the hard sciences can tell us what's real, and everything else is a personal value, opinion, or judgment, thing like that. Whereas Christianity, again, as I said in the intro, is, look, if it is true, it speaks to all of life. It does not separate the spiritual from the historical, from the moral. It speaks to everything. And so that's what I mean when I think it's becoming clearer that divide is getting wider in the sense of Christianity and secularism and those kind of things along worldview lines.
You ask a lot of great questions in the introduction to your book that I could basically use as just the basis for this interview. And along the lines of what you just said, Jonathan, is it reasonable to believe that Christianity is actually true anymore? I mean, given where we are with the success of the new atheists, their evangelistic fervor, Christopher Hitchens, I read today, says, thanks for praying for me, but there's not going to be any deathbed conversion for me. And the Christopher Hitchens, Richard Dawkins of the world have been very successful with their atheistic evangelism in drawing away disciples, and atheism is now out of the closet and very cool, and science is now directly competing. Not that it hasn't always, but science in a new kind of way is directly competing with Christianity. And the scientists and the people who hold to an intelligentsia kind of view of things, we don't need Christianity anymore because we've got science to explain everything. How does a guy sitting in the 21st century who professes faith in Jesus Christ deal with the avalanche in the media, on the internet, of everything that questions what we believe as Christians?
Yeah, that's a great question, and part of that is what drove Sean McDowell and I to co-write the book, previous book I wrote called Is God Just Human Invention, where we took the toughest 18 objections by the new atheists like Dawkins and Hitchens and the rest. But what we found was there's been basically a revolution in Christian philosophy and apologetics, but that hasn't filtered down to the local church yet and the students that I get to engage on a regular basis. And what we need to do is say, look, there are very good reasons Christianity is not anti-scientific. In fact, there's good evidence for the fine-tuning of the universe, and design requires a designer. There's good evidence for the origin of the universe, where time, space, matter, and energy had a beginning point that must point to a cause beyond that. So beginnings require beginners, and we look around, we know that moral truths are real, and moral truths require moral lawgivers. And so I talk about some of these arguments in the book, Think Christianly, as well, where we just need to talk about are the reasons for why we believe what we believe. And so, because many times kind of people put apologetics and defending the Christian faith, and it even sounds real technical and everything, you know, well, that's just a small segment of, you know, we'll have a small group for that in our church. And in fact, what we see in the New Testament is Paul, all throughout the book of Acts, he's reasoning with people, not only in the synagogues, but in the marketplace of ideas in Acts 17. Peter tells us to give a defense for the hope that we have within us, yet with gentleness and respect. We always need to treat whoever we're interacting with respect, but there's good reasons why we believe what we believe. And so we need to recover a holistic view of that, even in our preaching, to drop about 60-second illustration here or there from the New York Times and comment on various things so that we encourage our people, hey, look, our pastors, we know about these things and we can speak to them. Christianity actually has something to say.
What are some of the areas, Jonathan, where the people in the pews of conservative evangelical churches are operating more under the auspices of a secular worldview rather than a biblical worldview, and how should church leaders be dealing with that disconnect?
Yeah, I think one way is pretty common to all of us is the area of media and technology. I was having a friend with a buddy of mine yesterday who's a pastor of young adults in a fairly large church, and we were talking about just the influence of the media, and because ideas and images are constantly shaping people. So, for example, prominent shows like, for example, Glee or Modern Family, which seek in many ways to really kind of normalize homosexual behavior, nobody's making an argument for that way of life or that approach to sexuality or anything. They're just kind of assuming it, and that gets embedded in kind of the images and ideas and shows, and then that tends to shape background beliefs of culture over time. And so where we need to speak into that is, you know, if you look at the polls, I mean, there's not a huge difference in the way that Christians consume media and the way that everybody else does. So we're pretty uncritical, by and large, about we just kind of watch what's on or watch what everybody else has watched, or we use technology if it's available, and we're for technology, don't get me wrong, but so that's an area where we need to say, look, we need to exercise wisdom and discernment, process these, and as parents, watch these. And one of the things I'm teaching my kids is, look, you know, this show always teaches something. That movie is always teaching. So what do we learn? What's the lesson? You know, so those are some practical things we can talk about.
Yeah, and so at what point? At what point do we compromise, though? I mean, when the church, it seems, would look at a program like Glee and say, wow, that's really got the attention of our young people. Let's create something like that as part of our worship or a special part of our ministry to attract kids. Is that a wise thing to be doing for churches to model their ministry? You know, they've got the notion that, you know, our ministry is going to be gospel-centered, and we'll use Glee to kind of package it just to draw the kids in. Is that a good thing?
No, I wouldn't say it's a good thing to draw them in. What I think we need to do is step back, and you were going to ask me about culture in a sense, and we need to realize that Christians are a part of culture, and we're not against culture per se. Culture is simply, and I like this definition from Andy Crouch. I think it's the most transferable one that I've come across, is simply what people make of the world. And as creative image bearers in Genesis 1:27-28, Christians are called to make something of the world for the glory of God. Now, that's much more difficult in light of the fall. However, we're supposed to be doing that. What Christians are opposed to is the world system as it gets imposed and embedded within images and ideas and pop culture and various things. So we need to have different postures toward those things. So let's take any TV show we'd watch, for example. What would be a great exercise, quite honestly, would be take a youth group, and obviously the pastor, youth pastor, would have to prepare for this, but to show a clip from it and then narrate what's going on and asking questions. Hey, what assumptions are being made about our desires and what does it mean to be human and what's fulfilling in life? And then process and teach through those moments, but not necessarily use them and just kind of baptize them and say, hey, you know, we're just going to use this Glee to get people in. We want to interact with the issues of the day.
I love what you say at the very beginning of your book. We have unknowingly become apprentices to the blind guides of hedonism, naturalism, and pragmatism, and this is eroding our ability and motivation to communicate and embody the Word of God in this generation. You and I, Jonathan, would both argue, and we would believe fervently that the Word of God is alive, it's active, it's powerful. That the gospel is the power of God unto salvation, and yet so many Christians who occupy pews see the power in media. They see the power in the worldview that that is prevalent, that that is influencing them. How do we move people to an understanding that, hey, the thing that we're preaching on Sunday and the thing that we want to inculcate into our children, this thing called the Word of God, really is not just a better option to the blind guides of hedonism, naturalism, and pragmatism, but it is the only source of truth and the only source of life.
Yeah, and again, what I would advocate is we need to step back and actually get Christianity on the table of discussion in the area of truth. You know, sometimes I'll say this, and it makes some people uncomfortable in churches. You know, Christianity is the kind of thing that could be false. And the reason why I say it that way is if something can't be false, it can't be true. And if it's neither true or false, it's not in reality somewhere, and it's certainly not cognitive. It's not something to think about or explore. And so what we must do is model, especially as Christian leaders and pastors, is we must model and narrate the discussion and say, look, Christianity is actually true, and it rises to the level of being true or false. Here's the reasons why we believe it's true. Here's why we think it's reasonable. We can't do that enough, because what people are, their default setting is they're coming in, they think they operate by faith on Sunday, whatever that happens to be. And in our culture, it predominantly means faith is a feeling. And then they operate by knowledge Monday morning through Saturday night. And we must recover Christianity as a knowledge tradition. And that happens incrementally over time and casting vision and giving people confidence. Because honestly, one of the reasons why we come across sometimes Christians do so defensive is because we don't have confidence that what we believe is actually true. If we have knowledge of what's true, then we can have a conversation with somebody and not get defensive. We can say, look, here's what I believe, here's why. What do you think?
What do you mean by Jesus-anity versus Christianity?
Yeah, you know, that's the great distinction that Dr. Darrell Bach of Dallas Seminary came up with. And the basic idea there is everybody wants Jesus on their spiritual team. You know, whatever world religion or whatever movement, from Occupy Wall Street to all down to pick your religion, they all want Jesus on the team. The question is, are they going to allow him? So they have a lot of respect for him, but are they going to allow him to be who he claimed to be, where he claimed to be the Son of Man, the Son of God, the Messiah, the unique revelation of God, you know, all those kind of things, and the truth and the way and the life? Are they going to allow him to be that? And so we have a culture that's all for Jesus-anity, and whenever I speak on this, I use the little bobblehead Jesus and stick him up there, and everybody wants a piece of Jesus, but they don't want Christianity, that idea of the Messiah, who's the unique God-man. And so that's that distinction, because if you watch, I mean, we're heading into the holiday season again, and we're going to have countless shows on discovery and history and everywhere else, giving us the real Jesus and all these various portraits out there. And so the reader or the listener can say, well, is that Jesus-anity, where he's just a really good man or a good teacher, or is that Christianity, where he is actually the Son of God, claiming, and he actually claims to be?
There's so much more to talk about, Jonathan, and we're on a tight schedule today, but I'm going to have you back, and we're going to explore in more detail some of these, some of the specifics of your book. But let me tell the audience to get the book, Think Christianly, Looking at the Intersection of Faith and Culture. It's available at Jonathan's website, www.thinkchristianly.org. The book is just out from Zondervan. And you can follow Jonathan Morrow on Twitter as well, at Think Christianly. And Jonathan Morrow is the founder of thinkchristianly.org. And hopefully you and I can have an opportunity in the next month or so to talk again, Jonathan.
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me on.